Hey, everybody. We're back here at the Ogilvy Daystage Book Author Room. We are going to spare no further time getting started with our new book author because we are very honored and welcomed to have Susan Crawford, professor of the Harvard Kennedy School. She's going to speak to her book, The Big Squeeze, Communication Crisis in America, which is coming out shortly. And she's basically going to talk through the intersection of industry, politics, technology, wireless communication, and you. Big round of applause for Susan.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Susan Crawford, and I'm a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. I'm a columnist for Wired and for Bloomberg View, and I'm a former special assistant to President Obama for science, technology, and innovation policy. And I have a book coming out in November from Yale Press, The Squeeze, Communications Crisis in America. This is a picture that the BBC ran in 2007. It shows a group of young men sitting on some concrete bollards at night under light. This picture was taken in Guinea at the international airport there. Those students are there because their electricity in their house isn't reliable. So they come to the airport parking lot with all the cars zooming around and the planes landing to sit under the lights and to do their homework. In western Massachusetts, in the counties where the most home-based businesses are, kids go miles to do their homework in the parking lots of libraries because that's the only place they can get internet access. And if you're a startup, all of you entrepreneurs out there who want to move to Brooklyn, let's say you want a gig of reliable connectivity. It's not even clear where you would get that gig. And if you call Verizon, they're going to quote to you $16,000 a month with no breakout of what that cost entails, what service level agreement goes with it. And you're just stuck. There's nowhere else for you to go. The problem is that other countries have taken a very concerted approach to internet access and specifically to fiber access. Symmetrical, fast, commodity connectivity for their businesses and people. So in South Korea, in Japan, in Sweden, in France, in the Netherlands, we've got the ability to get speeds that are hundreds of times faster than what's available here for a fifth the price, a sixth the price. And it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's part of life. So internet access, this utility, this essential commodity for America, does not adequately exist here. We have a dismal situation. About a third of Americans don't subscribe at all. It's very expensive and it's very slow. Why South by Southwest should care about this is that we know that storage costs are going down, computation costs are going down, but connectivity is a terrible story. And if you're building something that you want people to be able to use in a fiber sandbox, if you're building something that depends on video or reliable high-speed connectivity of any kind, it's not going to happen in America. China is moving 300 million of its citizens to make 100 megabit speeds by 2015. 300 million Chinese will have fiber access. Right now, only about 7%, 8% of Americans have it. Now, why did this happen? My motivation for writing this book as I came out of the administration was to explain to Americans that, like the banking crisis, we have a regulatory crisis when it comes to internet access. I'm not talking about regulating the internet, so don't freak out about that. I worry about that myself. This is about regulating internet access, the sidewalks for the conversation, the commodity, the utility. We've got an enormous problem with gatekeepers that are very powerful, that constrain access in this country and have no incentive to build out additional facilities. It's really just like banks. And CDOs used to be boring, but they're not to us anymore. And I'm hoping the telecom policy gets to that point as well. It's slightly technical. It takes a few words to explain, so let me try it out on you. We actually need a movie about this. Chinatown. What Chinatown did for water rights involving death, murder, incest. We need that for telecom policy at this point. I'm hoping we get there. Here's the analogy that works for most people when I explain it. In 1900, electricity in America was considered to be a luxury. It was only available to businesses and to the richest neighborhoods in America. Most of rural America was left out. Anybody in an ordinary neighborhood simply didn't have it. It was called a luxury. And there was a tremendous consolidation among the private companies that provided electricity to Americans at that point. So 85% of the market was controlled by 15 giant companies. And the Federal Trade Commission found that those companies were routinely gouging customers. We've got the same situation when it comes to high-speed internet access in America. We have now only about four companies that account for most high-speed internet access in our country. On the wireless side, Verizon and AT&T account for 65% of subscribers, 71% of all new net subscribers in 2011, 90% of free cash flow goes to those two companies, Verizon and AT&T, with Sprint and T-Mobile distant players. They have tremendous market power, and because they're not subject to competition or to particular regulation, it's possible for them to just raise prices and keep scarcity in place. That's not good for all the apps that everybody at this gigantic conference is talking about. That's the situation in wireless. On the wired side, basically, this is a fascinating story. 80% of Americans will have access to just one choice of provider when it comes to truly high-speed connectivity, and that's their local cable incumbent. There's a story behind this. About 10 years ago, the telephone company's DSL networks was actually competitive with cable modem access service. They were about the same price, had about the same speeds. Then the cable guys figured out technology that they could just apply to their pipes to allow for very high DOCSIS 3.0 speeds without having to dig up their networks. On the DSL side, that was over copper lines. The phone companies would have to actually dig up the streets and put in fiber. Verizon's Fios service can compete with DOCSIS 3.0, but Verizon has announced that it's backing off. It's not expanding fiber to America, because it's very expensive to install, very expensive to dig up the streets and start over again. These two natural monopolies, wireless on one side and wired on the other, are complementary services. They don't compete with each other. No one would start a business relying on wireless access. It's subject to harsh interference in the world. It degrades very sharply as you walk away from towers. And it just doesn't have the throughput, Shannon's law tells us, it does not have the throughput to compete effectively with a cable wire where there is no interference. So we've got these two gigantic natural monopolies on the wired side. Comcast is very much in the lead, Time Warner in the second place. And the cable guys, the big ones, never enter each other's territories. Comcast never goes into Time Warner land. Cablevision never goes into Comcast land. They long ago figured out that it made sense to control the whole of market wherever they were. So they swapped systems and said, look, you take Minneapolis, I'll take San Francisco, and they don't enter each other's territories. So that's a problem. Imagine one water company controlling access to water in your region and able to decide who gets it, whether it's just rich people and businesses, and able to decide without any regulation how much it costs. That's where we are with high-speed internet access today. Cable is at best a second best. It's not fiber. It's not symmetrical. It doesn't allow for publishing upload as fast as download. That's a problem. But for most Americans, that's going to be your only choice, and there's no competition and no oversight. It's quite a world we're living in. So as I left the administration, I became very interested in the Comcast-NBCU merger that was announced at the end of 2009, sorry, it's now been 2 years. And the book explores the world of telecommunications using that merger, which really was titanic, and talking about the lobbying process that went into it and how Comcast can use NBCU programming, and in particular sports, to make it very expensive for any new wired competitor to enter its markets. So as one interviewee told me as I was working on the book, Comcast owns the internet in America. At the end of December 2011, the deal between Verizon and Comcast just confirmed what I'd been writing about for 2 years. Under this deal, most of you know about it, Verizon Wireless and Comcast will co-market each other's services. So Comcast will sell Verizon Wireless will sell Comcast. What this means is that they're tacitly agreeing not to compete. So Verizon is not going to be expanding Fios beyond the footprint where it is. Remember, it's the only alternative to the cable incumbents. And Comcast is not going to be entering the wireless marketplace. This is great for the shareholders of these companies, but not very good for America. On both sides, both the wireless and wired sides, we're seeing tremendous market power, which allows these companies to hang on to scarcity. So just in the last couple of weeks, AT&T has announced effectively that app providers are going to need to pay AT&T to reach AT&T subscribers. How do they do this? By saying we're going to set up a sort of 800 number system where the app provider pays for the bandwidth, and that bandwidth won't be subject to the cap that's been imposed by the carrier. That should be cataclysmic for the developers working in this building, that they're going to have to deal with AT&T and Verizon, the only two players in that marketplace, if they want to reach anybody and sell their services using their applications. Same thing on the wired side, tremendous amount of scarcity and control that's possible. Usage caps on the wired side are going to hit companies like Netflix when we all start streaming high-speed video. Here's a new term for you, Facebook Zero. The idea that the wired providers can rate the traffic coming from Facebook as not being subject to any cap and also treat it as a specialized service, not a best efforts internet service. So if you're trying to compete with Facebook, it's going to be really hard because the user won't want to go to something that looks like it's going to cost more for them because they're going to bump up against a cap. So tremendous amounts of control. Netflix has essentially given up the battle before a single bullet was fired, never really tried to compete head-to-head with the cable guys' video products, and is now saying, as of last week, that it's going to be a cable channel, that they're going to be doing deals with the cable distributor who has so much market power in America. So in the course of doing the book, I did a lot of interviews, dozens of people in the content industry and the telecommunications industry and government. Almost all of them did not want to be named because they feared retribution from Comcast. Another funny thing happened as I was working on this book. I tried to get an interview with David Cohen, who is the genius behind the Comcast plans. It is a very well-managed company. I really admire David Cohen. I kept calling. I was sending emails to his assistant asking for an interview. Suddenly, I got an email back saying, "Dear Susan, David's available on April 4th, but not May 30th. Can you come to Philadelphia and have lunch?" I responded immediately, "Yes, can't wait, want to talk to him." It turns out they were writing to the wrong Susan Crawford. They were writing to the AT&T Susan Crawford. And as soon as I accepted the invitation for the interview, they said, "Oh, no, we didn't mean it. He's actually not available." So just, you know, small story in the course of doing this book. So I didn't get a chance to talk to David Cohen, but I talked to a bunch of other people. And every market move that I've been seeing as I've been working on the book just confirms the situation we're in America. So what's the answer? Well, remember the electricity story and how those private companies consolidated to the point where the Federal Trade Commission said that they were gouging consumers? That's where we are in America today with high-speed internet access. The answer then in 1920s and 30s was for municipalities to build their own electricity co-ops or to manage their own co-ops because they understood that having electricity available to their entire town was good for everybody, not just good for rich people, and was going to help their entire economy. And people named their children after Lyndon Johnson when he brought electricity to West Texas. Transformative thing. Just as internet access is to rural America today, people would be very grateful if it could be brought. So publicly managed internet access is the only way we're going to get around these tremendously powerful gatekeepers in America for internet access. This is hitting consumers' pocketbooks. It's hitting innovation in America. And it's a enormous injustice to our country that we can't seem to provide this commodity service for every American as many other developed nations are doing. And our expectations are so low. We're so used to this dismal connectivity. It's not even talked about in the press, in the major media. So I'd like to change that state of affairs. What we know is that the cable companies and the wireless companies in their separate marketplaces will continue charging for services that they're not partner with, that they have enough market power to constrain access, to not build additional facilities because that's not in their interest, and to just keep the status quo in place. That's not going to change. But remember Eisenhower. He built in the 50s a huge federal interstate highway system. If he hadn't done that, we would be stuck with a hodgepodge of little roads across America, which would have doomed us as an economy. We should be able to do big things today. It shouldn't be that just because we have a polarized country with Republicans and Democrats screaming at each other, we can't make this a bipartisan issue. This should be an issue on which candidates are elected or not. It is in many other countries. People have to answer questions at press conferences about their attitude towards high-speed internet access and towards fiber. It should be here in America. So I want to raise expectations. I want people to expect that our country, which brought us the internet, should be looking behind the competitors rather than being completely trounced by the rest of the developed world. I'm hopeful that this book will help that process. So the name of the book is The Squeeze, The Communications Crisis in America. If you'd like to see some chapters, send me an email or a tweet at me and I will respond. I can send PDFs now and it'll be out in November 2012. Thanks very much. Any questions? Do I have some time? What's my time? Okay, questions. Come on, this is exciting stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a big problem. Between cities and the fiber backbones that run across America is what we call middle mile links or backhaul. And often that's sold by Comcast, Verizon, or AT&T. It's a very concentrated market, and there are very few people to deal with. And that's why in the stimulus bill at the beginning of 2009, the Obama administration put aside $7 billion to help build more middle mile infrastructure to which last mile providers could connect so that we could get over that bottleneck. But that's a problem. That's where regulatory strength needs to come in. And regulations become a bad word for some reason in America. But when it comes to essential services like electricity and water and connectivity, we should be able to say that backhaul should be available on a non-discriminatory tariffed basis to each town that wants to use it. And right now it's privately controlled. Yep. All right, so the AT&T T-Mobile merger did not go through. I don't think that actually changes the game because AT&T and Verizon are so far ahead of Sprint and T-Mobile. They really are in their spectrum holdings and the kind of spectrum they have and their free cash flow. They're just enormous companies. So it actually doesn't change the game that merger didn't go through. What has helped is that T-Mobile now has a voice. T-Mobile can talk. And T-Mobile is objecting strenuously to the deal between Verizon and Comcast, pointing out that that's going to make it even worse because part of the Verizon-Comcast deal is a spectrum transfer from Comcast to Verizon. So it gives T-Mobile a voice, which is great for policy debates, but it doesn't change the market structure in America. Other questions? Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah. As a Comcast customer, I'm on the phone with them all the time. What can I do? Oh, okay. The action plan here is to actually not talk to Comcast about this, but to, because that's for the moment, that's the only person we have to talk to, but to gather with behind people like Public Knowledge and Free Press and other groups in Washington that care about these issues, make sure that the techies in your town are informed about this and that they see this as, like SOPA and PIPA, a tremendous threat to the future of their businesses and that they're willing to make this an election issue, that you can come up with your own candidates because that's eventually how we're going to have to change this. It's going to take a big upsurge of energy and politicians that see this as an important issue and want to break this up. Yeah. You work for who? Oh, I'm glad that I said the right thing. Okay. I hope I said the right thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Right. It's a great complimentary service, no question. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. The Obama administration made a few decisions that made it impossible for T-Mobile to get access to the spectrum it wanted. So that, and that fight continues, but it's looking worse all the time. Yep. Right. Right. This is Larry Irving. He used to run the NTIA, which is our advisor to the president for telecommunications. I think if there's absolutely nothing else, wireless is terrific. And if you want to be mobile, it's the only choice you've got. But 95% of any wireless service is a fiber anyway. I mean, it's mostly a wire. It has to connect to something. So all these problems with the wired infrastructure deeply affect what happens on the wireless side as well. What's that? Oh, that'd be great to talk to you, yeah. Other questions? Yeah. Oh, and I have no clients. I want to make some disclosures here. I have no clients. I don't want any. Okay, yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a great story of Chattanooga and Lafayette. And I'm hopeful that the Google fiber installation is going to be a terrific disruptive story, showing that it's actually not that expensive to build a fiber network in Kansas City and that it's replicable across the country. And that if you just think of it as a long-term investment rather than a first-run movie, you know, something very expensive and rare, that it makes sense for cities to get the bonds issued, make this thing get installed and run these networks. So yeah, there are definitely success stories. Chattanooga is a big one. There are a bunch of municipal fiber stories that have worked really well. There are also success stories in other countries where, as a matter of industrial policy, they've really dug in here and made sure that all of their citizens will have fiber access. Stockholm, guys, unbelievable. Startups are moving to Stockholm in droves. I see a head nodding, right? Why? Because there's fiber, there's like lots of fiber, and it's cheap, and so you can structure your business differently because you don't have this tremendous barrier to entry, and you get to explore services that you couldn't use in America. Too bad what? Okay, tiny market, but Australia is a big market, and they're bringing fiber to over 90% of their people, fiber to the home. That's their plan. I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. Breakup of who? Australia. No, I don't. I don't go into that. This is mostly the Comcast-NBCU merger is like a giant iceberg. It's totally slippery. It has many, many angles. And so the book has to get through a lot of those angles. The programming side is fascinating. Sports, you know, what's possible there. And also the background, the regulatory background, how we got here, I think is important to understand. So I haven't gone over to Australia's policy function, but I mentioned it. I've always been fascinated with their... This became a big election issue in Australia. So there were referenda, and people were really upset about this, and it should be here. It should be here. All right, well, if there are no more questions, thank you all very much for your attention.